Hey there, veterans. This is Justin with a quick note before today's show. I've put together a few free ebooks that serve as a quantitative complement to these qualitative interviews. So if that's how your brain works, head over to the resources tab at beyonduniform.io and check them out. Hope that helps and enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 67 with Don Fowle.
There is the expectation, at least the places where I've been fortunate to work, that growth and advancement come through a series of thoughtful mistakes. I've had to really learn in my career, being open and transparent when you make a mistake, being willing to talk about it, being willing to embrace it, as a leader can be really hard. You know, I think early in my career, I felt like there was this expectation that if people were looking to me to lead, that talking about any sort of mistake or misstep was a sign of weakness. And when in fact, I think actually, you know, the best way to build trust with your team, with people who you work with, is to be open and transparent and create an environment where other people feel comfortable as well.
Many people I've interviewed on the show have recommended I interview Don. Brad Bonney from episode 4 and Jimmy Sopko from episode 6 both credit Don as being an enormous help in their careers at Airbnb and Pinterest, respectively. Don not only has an incredible background at the most famous companies in Silicon Valley, but he's also a constant advocate for veterans and frequent mentor for those going through career transitions. Here's a quick look at Don's background. Don is the CEO at Athos, a company that offers a wearable technology that is fully integrated in workout clothing and can track your muscle groups, heart rate, breathing level, and more. They've raised over $50 million in funding since their founding 4 years ago. Don started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served for 5 years as a Marine as part of the Force Recon Unit. After his transition out of the Marines, he went to Stanford Business School. After that, he joined Google in 2006 as a manager of online sales and operations. 2 years later, he joined Facebook as their VP of online operations, and 4 years after that, Pinterest as the head of operations. This episode is shorter than normal, but it's chock full of great advice, not just for those of you thinking about a career in tech, but any veteran seeking to get the most out of their career. As always, at beyonduniform.io, there are other episodes, show notes, a directory of resources, and more. So let's dive in to my interview with Don Fowle. Well, joining me today in Redwood City is Don Fowle. Don, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I'm really excited to connect. Several guests who've been on the show before have cited you as a mentor and have said you were really strategic in getting them their first job or just providing a lot of guidance. And so I know your advice is going to be really helpful for the community. And I always like to start by asking about that transition story. So when did you first decide to leave the Marines and how did you approach that decision?
Sure. So I got off active duty in 2003. I'd just gotten home from overseas. I was ready to make the transition. Wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do next, but was excited about the potential opportunity that existed. I'd studied engineering undergrad in school. And so, you know, my best guess at that point was, well, you know, maybe something in technology might be interesting. But, you know, to be honest, I didn't know if that was possible. I didn't know if a technology company would hire someone like me. And I sure didn't know, you know, how to even think about navigating that process. And so I applied to grad school really as a means of buying some time to figure that out. And so was fortunate enough to be able to move up to the Bay Area to go to grad school. And really that's where I was, you know, fortunate enough to get an introduction to a guy, another veteran, who had been at Naval Academy undergrad, GSB grad as well, who was currently working at Google. And it was that guy who was kind enough to take some time out of his schedule to help me really pass along my resume and understand how to think about that transition process.
And I wanted to ask about that because I think it was Brad Bonney that had said that he was really inspired and thought that your story of how you landed that initial job at Google was really helpful for him in his transition. Could you share more about – he said that it just took a lot of grit and determination to get that first role at Google.
Yeah, you know, it was – you know, when I first moved up to the Bay Area to go to grad school, you know, I thought I had 2 years to kind of figure out what I wanted to do next. But in reality, for most of these business programs, you have to start thinking about your internship a month or two after you start school. And so one of the nice benefits that you get out of a business program is a lot of companies will do on-campus recruiting. And so – these organizations will come and say, hey, we want to interview 20 candidates for, let's say, 2 or 3 roles. And as an applicant, you'll submit your resume, throw your hat in the ring. For me, you know, the initial part of that process was pretty discouraging. Most of the hiring managers and recruiters that I talked to weren't necessarily looking for someone like me. I think for veterans, we have such a non-traditional background. Typically when you look at a role in technology, one of the requirements is, you know, has X number of years working in consumer technology. So by the specifics of the job requirement, I wasn't qualified for any of these jobs. And so I got a lot of no's. And then ultimately was fortunate enough to, you know, I was really connecting to this veteran who was working at Google, who had made the loop, who was nice enough to pass along my resume and get me in front of someone that I could have a conversation with. So that was, you know, really a big part of it was just being determined, being fortunate enough to connect with another veteran who could help. And then there was certainly a learning curve for me in really understanding how to represent myself and tell my story through that interview process. And so understanding how to talk about leadership, how to talk about what I had done in the Marine Corps and how that might be relevant. That was definitely a learning process, again, because in some respects, I was a non-traditional candidate for almost every role that I interviewed for.
Do you have any advice? I think that comes up a lot, this aspect of storytelling and effectively translating one's background from the military. Do you have any advice on either how to do that or where to look or resources to consider in figuring that out?
Yeah. So one of the things that I have been consistently surprised by in my experience working in technology is how rare it is that a candidate is incredibly well prepared for an interview. You'd almost expect that that's kind of the core blocking and tackling, but candidates who are exceptionally well prepared really stand out, and that's true really at every level, even for really senior roles that I've hired for recently. And so as a veteran, I think it's even more important than the average candidate. And so, you know, as I made my way through the hiring process, I learned by virtue of each interview how to better refine the stories that I told and really how to put myself in the shoes of the hiring manager on the other side of the table and think about, you know, what is it for this particular role that this person probably wants to know about me? What does this person need to know about me? And specifically, as a veteran, what are the unique set of obstacles that I need to overcome in this interview? What are the preconceived notions that may exist? And they're not necessarily – these preconceived notions aren't necessarily negative perceptions. It's just the types of perceptions that are grounded in the fact that the vast majority of people you interview with have never served a day in the military. They just don't understand it. So – for example, some of the, you know, I think most common ones are, you know, one, hey, military, you know, leadership in the military is all about telling people what to do. It is hierarchical, dictatorial. You know, as a leader, your job is to order people around. And, you know, particularly in technology, where there is such a consensus-based, more of a consensus-based leadership environment, it's really, really important that as a veteran in one of these interviews, you've got the opportunity to help that person understand what leadership in the military actually means. So I think that's one that's really, really critical. A second is, I think, another really common obstacle is this fact that you just don't have domain expertise. And if you're interviewing for a leadership role, for the vast majority of these positions, again, you've got this looking, you know, the perfect candidate has 5 to 7 years of experience working in consumer technology. And so, you know, you obviously can't manufacture that experience. But what I found to be really helpful is making sure that I was the best prepared candidate as it related to that company, their products, the industry. And so what I wanted that to come across in the interview was that person walking out at the end of it and say, wow, you know what, Don hasn't worked a day in technology, but it's so clear how hard he worked to prepare for this interview. It's impressive how much he knows despite not having worked a single day in tech. And by virtue of that, I'm really confident that he's going to get up to speed really, really quickly. And so, you know, I had a set of stories by the end, as I got more experience interviewing, I had a set of stories that I had prepared to make very specific points. that I made sure I told in every single interview, whether it was asked explicitly or not. I had the leadership story. I had the story of working cross-functionally. I had the story of juggling a variety of different priorities in a really dynamic, uncertain environment. I had a story of how to create a real open debate within my teams. You know, what are the things that that person wants to know? And then how do you take stories and experiences from your time in the military that help people understand how you've learned those same skills and experiences during your time serving?
I love that. And I love that the power of stories can convey messages. And I love that sense of preparation, demonstrating your hunger for the role and hunger for that job. And I imagine that comes through pretty strongly in that interview. And one of the things I wanted to ask about is, it sounds like when you made that transition from Google to Facebook, it was a pretty risky move at the time, but that was really precipitated by the decision to follow a mentor. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on what that transition was like.
Yeah. So, you know, I started at Google full time in 2006, worked there for about a year and a half, 2 years. And, it's at that point, I felt like I was just starting to get my feet under me. You know, in some respects, you feel like while you're drawing on a ton of experience from your time serving, you know, you really have to learn the ropes of this new industry. And so I felt a year and a half in, I finally got a little momentum. At a great company. I absolutely loved Google. The business was exploding at that point. It was growing incredibly fast. I had the opportunity to look at a number of roles at Google to continue to grow my career there. And then I got this call out of the blue from a friend who was working at Facebook. And, you know, in retrospect, it was, looking back now, given what Facebook has achieved, it looks like an obvious answer, but it certainly wasn't at the time. You know, in 2008, when I transitioned, MySpace was bigger than Facebook. Microsoft had just invested at a valuation that people thought Facebook would never grow into. Again, in retrospect, that looks really foolhardy. The dialogue at that point was, you know, you can't monetize social media, you can never make money there. And Facebook was a college product at that point. And so, you know, I think for me, I was early enough in my career that I really wanted to continue to have the opportunity to take some risk. And when I reflected on what I'd loved about Google, it was really this notion of building and scaling, of being in an environment where there's growth and opportunity. And if I worked really hard, and this is one of the things I love about technology, if you work really hard and demonstrate you can execute, you can take on responsibility as fast as you can earn it. There is no ceiling to your advancement. And so I saw this opportunity in Facebook, which was smaller, earlier stage. The people I met there were incredible. I got a chance to meet with a number of members of the team and the early executive team at that point. And it just felt really special and really right. And it felt like an opportunity where I could take what I'd learned in my time serving, what I'd learned at Google, to go to a new environment and try to help build something special. And, you know, it's funny, the woman, Sheryl Sandberg, who I'd worked for at Google, ended up transitioning about 3 or 4 months after I did. And which I was fortunate. I was, you know, she was an incredible mentor there, and then had the opportunity after she transitioned to really learn and grow. And that was, I'd say that was probably one thing that was missing when I transitioned to Facebook. I still had a ton to learn. I'd only been working in tech for about a year and a half. But when Sheryl transitioned, I had someone, you know, one of the best people in the industry, best people in the world, who I could really, really learn from. And so it really made for the perfect experience. And so I guess, you know, for me, it was recognizing how much I loved growth, and it was being willing at that point in my career to take a little bit of risk. And I was fortunate that it played out really well.
Was that similar with Pinterest then, of just seeing explosive growth and the opportunity to learn very quickly?
Yeah, it was similar thematically. I'd spent about a little over four years at Facebook, and could not have been a better experience. Incredible company, incredible team culture. I'd learned a ton. I'd gotten to the point where I was ready for something new. So I was looking around at opportunities at Facebook. There wasn't necessarily kind of that perfect role for me there. And so, you know, I had my head up and got a call again from a friend who was at Pinterest. Pinterest was 30 employees, growing, had just kind of exploded there. The role was foundationally a lot of what I had done at Facebook that I loved. and a lot of new stuff. And so I saw an opportunity to really grow personally. It was an incredible group of people with whom I felt like I shared a real common set of principles and values. And it was a lot of building. You know, it came back to the thing that I really loved, this notion of figuring out, okay, how do we, you know, in the midst of this massive explosive growth, how do you build a great team? How do you build a business? And so it was certainly really uncomfortable. It was my first at least 6 months to a year there were really hard. It was a role that was broader than anyone that I'd done before. But I also learned more than I've ever learned. And so, yeah, thematically, a lot of the things that drew me to Facebook were the things that drew me to Pinterest as well.
And it sounds like after Pinterest, you took off a little bit of time to take a break from working before starting in your current role. And I'm just wondering, I think that's really valuable for veterans to hear, like, how you made that decision. I imagine your phone must have been ringing constantly for opportunities, and how you managed to maintain that balance for a little bit of time without that itch to get right back in.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, when I transitioned from Google to Facebook and then Facebook to Pinterest, I really didn't look at any other opportunities in either case. And I think I may have taken a week or two or a little bit more here and there. And so it was not, you know, what I would necessarily advise in terms of how you switch jobs. You know, I generally try to encourage people, look around. You know, there's always a ton of interesting things going on before you make that transition, make sure it's right. I was super fortunate in both those cases, kind of lucked out that they ended up being great for me. But I really, you know, leaving Pinterest, my wife and I had our second child. And so it was a great opportunity for us to take a little time together and spend time with family. And then I really deliberately wanted to carve out time to really kind of survey the landscape and see what was out there. I knew I'd worked in consumer technology in a set of roles. I knew I absolutely loved that. But there was a whole host of other opportunities, different companies, different sizes, different stages, different roles. And so, you know, as I started to talk to people, I said, look, I'm not going to work for 6 months minimum. I'm not taking any job unless it drops out of the sky and is so obviously the perfect one for me. You know, I'm not starting before it was Labor Day in my case. And I'm really glad I did that. I'm not sure I would have landed in the same type of job. I think the time and the perspective and having a chance to really meet people was invaluable for me.
And I wanted to ask about the biggest mistake that you've made, or one of the bigger mistakes that you've made since getting out of the military. And I think it's particularly important for this interview because I think from everyone's external standpoint, you have had such an incredible career of just in the history of Silicon Valley, working at organizations at their peak. And so I'm wondering if you could share about one of these mistakes you made and what you took away from that.
Oh, gosh. I mean, the time that I've spent in tech is littered with mistakes. You know, I think one of the things I love about this industry is that there is the expectation, at least the places where I've been fortunate to work, that growth and advancement come through a series of thoughtful mistakes. And so I've always really enjoyed being part of cultures that not only were open to mistakes, but that actually encouraged it, taking risks with your career, taking risks in your job. And then I think it's really on, I've had to really learn in my career, being open and transparent when you make a mistake, being willing to talk about it, being willing to embrace it as a leader can be really hard. You know, I think early in my career, I felt like there was this expectation that if people were looking to me to lead, that talking about any sort of mistake or misstep was a sign of weakness. And when in fact, I think actually, you know, the best way to build trust with your team, with people who you work with, is to be open and transparent and create an environment where other people feel comfortable as well. So one of the, you know, I think the most obvious that comes to mind was, you know, when I was working early at Pinterest, I had the opportunity to work on some of our HR programs and specifically how we thought about compensation. And I took on a project to look at how we did equity, how we allocated equity over time, gave refreshes for people. And, you know, I did a talk to a number of people and kind of came upon an approach, a model that was somewhat new in market, but rationally, logically made a ton of sense. And so, you know, in haste, moved forward with rolling this out. And you know, what ended up happening in retrospect was an idea that made sense in principle on paper, had a just long series of problems with it. And discovered pretty quickly as we introduced it to people on the team that there were a number of gaps and problems, that employees viewed it as really unfriendly, that there were a set of implications that I hadn't really fleshed out. And so we had to wind that back. So we had to go, you know, take something that we were ready to roll out, that we had done a work on, that we had gotten approval from the board on, and go back to the team and say, you know what, we've gotten feedback on this. We're going to go back to the drawing board. And, you know, it was something that at the time, I think eroded some trust with the team. It eroded trust between them and the leadership team. And so, you know, it was a big miss on my part. And you know, in that particular case, hadn't taken the time to really think through the model, really stress test it with people on the team. And so, you know, I, you know, had to go back to the team and apologize and say, hey, look, here was the intent, the spirit behind it. Here's where I messed up. You know, thank you for calling it out. We're going to go back to the drawing board and fix this. And I think it took us some time to rebuild trust. But that was a really, really big learning moment for me.
That's great. What about having mentored so many different veterans and seen so many different veterans? Are there any common mistakes that you see people make that listeners should be aware of?
Yeah, you know, I guess particularly for folks, I talk to a lot of vets who are, you know, in the midst of thinking about a transition or looking for a job, a lot that are just starting to transition into technology, and some who are looking for a role a little further on in their career. And so I think some of the most common things that, you know, that I'll see, which I think are, you know, foundationally things that I went through as well. I think the first is, I think that a lot of vets assume that there are a variety of roles that are off the table, that aren't possible. And so in technology, that could be, hey, I couldn't possibly work in technology because I don't have a computer science background. Or I can't work in, the only job I can get in technology is working in operations or sales. Or I can only work at a really big, mature tech company. And so, you know, what I have told kind of repeatedly, and I've seen this firsthand, is, you know, there is a vet doing every job at almost every company. You know, there are, you know, veteran technology leaders who are computer scientists, who are in product management, who are in product marketing, who are in sales, who are in operations. And I've been really pleasantly surprised over time at how many companies in the Valley have vets in really significant leadership roles in the company. And so, you know, first piece of advice that I always share with folks is, look, don't, as you think about where you want to land and the type of job you might want, don't take anything off the table. Don't assume that you can't get it. The second thing is, I think vets have a tendency of just really underrepresented the experience and skills that they bring to the table. You know, I think for us as vets, you learn how to lead, and you have the opportunity to lead and learn at such a young age relative to almost any other profession or industry. And so, you know, I only stayed in, you know, between 5 and 6 years, but, you know, when I left active duty, I had 5 or 6 years of experience teams anywhere from, you know, 30 to 75 people. And so entering business school, there wasn't a single one of my classmates. And these are brilliant people who have worked in iBanking and consulting and technology and venture. None of them have led. You know, if they were fortunate, maybe they had managed 1 or 2 people. And so you have so many vets. You know, I remember feeling when I showed up for grad school, like, I'm the least qualified person in this room. I can't follow the accounting conversations. I can't follow the strategy conversations. How could I possibly compete with these people? And you know, so, and it was all grounded in this assumption that either my leadership experience wasn't as relevant in the private sector, or that it was kind of table stakes. And so it took me a little time to recognize, like, you've got this, veterans have this asset that is so fundamentally valuable. And the most scarce resource in technology, in my opinion, is strong leaders who can build great teams. And those principles that make you a great leader in the military are the exact same principles that make you a great leader in the private sector. There is some adjustment for sure. So those are the two most common points of advice that I'll share with vets. Don't take anything off the table. Recognize how valuable your experience is, and really put that at the forefront as you start to think about your search.
I think that's fantastic. And I'd love to learn about your current role and how you found your way into the wearable technology space.
Sure. So, you know, as we discussed a little bit earlier, you know, when I left my last role at Pinterest, I took a bunch of time to kind of, you know, really evaluate a bunch of opportunities. And, you know, the advice I took a little of my own medicine in terms of what I share with folks in terms of how to think about the job transition. So the first thing I started with was just making a list of the companies whose products or mission resonated for me personally. So, you know, what do I enjoy doing? What do I love? What do I get excited about? And, you know, I did this by, there were certain things I knew by virtue of my friends and my, and the people I know in the Valley. I did a lot of reading. So reading tech blogs, talked to a lot of people in the community, investors, to understand what was out there. And then I started just making a list. Hey, what are the companies that I get excited about? And then I started to have conversations with those respective teams. And, you know, for me, I got down to a short list of three companies that I was really excited about. I was excited for kind of different reasons. It was interesting. They were in slightly different parts of the technology sector. The roles were slightly different. For Athos, Athos really clicked on a number of dimensions. The first is, you know, what we are trying to do. So, you know, we talk about our mission is to build better athletes, and we're trying to create an experience for people that helps everyone get the most out of their training. So, you know, whatever your respective goal is, we want to make sure you've got the perfect, you know, workout strategy and that you can execute every workout and get the most out of it. And so Athos, for me, that mission really resonates. It sits at the intersection of two of my technologies. I love tech. I've always been, you know, a gadget geek, and I love sports and fitness. It's been a part of my life since I was a little kid. And so I've been an early adopter of every fitness technology gadget, and have been, you know, really hoping for an overall experience that really changes the way that I think about my health and my fitness. And so when I met the early team here and saw the product they had built, I just found myself getting really excited, waking up in the morning, thinking about what this product and what this experience could be. You know, so that was the first. You know, the second was, you know, I think what the founding team here, what our two founders, DJ and Chris, were looking for was a mix of what I thought I could bring to the table. I've always thought about, you know, every successive career move for me, I've wanted 50% of the problems on day one to feel somewhat familiar, like I can, you know, use my experience to add some value, and 50% to be a real stretch and say, gosh, I've never faced this before, because those are the environments in which I, you know, I really feel like I'm learning the most. And so they, you know, they were looking for someone to really build and lead the business side of the company. Was really excited about that. And then finally, beyond DJ and Chris, really felt like the culture of the organization, the people I had met, really passionate about the mission, really humble, you know, brilliant and accomplished, but everything, you know, as I met with more people on the team, it was so clear that everyone was working in service of the same goal and mission, that they really believed in being a tight-knit team. And so, you know, at the end of the day, that's what really did it for me. It was getting the chance to work in a space that I'm passionate about. It's a space that I think is poised for just massive change. I think the way that people think about their health and fitness is going to fundamentally change in the next 5 to 10 years, largely driven by these advances in technology. And it was a company that I felt was best positioned to capitalize on that.
That's great. Well, Don, I know you've got to run, but I appreciate your time and advice for the Beyond the Uniform community. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Yeah, well, my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Justin. Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyonduniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyonduniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.